Good morning. Today is Monday, May 9, 2005, and I'd like to open a public hearing and a possible work session on House Bill 879 first. Okay, I'd like to welcome this senator from my district. She's my senator.
Is that right?
Yes, she is.
Oh.
Welcome. And,
oh, thank you, Chair Lam.
And before you do that, Jim, could you explain what the bill does?
Yes, Senate Bill 879 modifies Oregon's strategic investment program. It requires counties to request that the Oregon Economic Community Development Commission establish strategic investment zones. So this is a new aspect to the strategic investment program. The zone is defined as a geographic area within which the property of eligible projects may be exempt from property taxation under ORS 307.123. That's the basic strategic investment program tax exemption statute. This would apply to strategic investment zones and projects designated as eligible on or after January 1st, 2006.
All right. Thank you very much. With that, who's going to go first? All right, Senator Anderson, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Lam, and members of the committee. I'm delighted to be here. I'm Senator Lori Moss Anderson from Gresham. Thank you for hearing this bill. This bill came before us when Gresham started thinking about an industrial, spring water industrial site in East Gresham. And I just wanted to give you some history why they'll get into the particulars, but I just want to bring you up to date. We are trying to bring development out to East Multnomah County, and this is one way that we feel will make it easier for us to draw industries to East Multnomah County. I think you might have remembered when Fujitsu went by the wayside and left the country, actually, and the way we got Microchip to come in was using the strategic investment program. It takes almost 2 years to be approved for a strategic investment program. And LSI is another one in our district that took advantage of it also. But the city was looking at and brought this idea to me saying that since it's so laborious and takes so much time for one company, if we could set up a zone and make it much more efficient way of drawing industry here. And with that, I will go to my other committee, and I'll let the city of Gresham take over here.
Thank you very much. Before you have questions from this panel here, seems to me no questions. Thank you for coming.
Nice to see you.
Yes. Take care. All right, Ron.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ron Papsdorf. I represent the city of Gresham. Wanted to just give a quick overview of the bill and what it does, and then I want to have Mr. John Fregonesi give a little bit of an overview presentation on spring water, specifically to give you some flavor for an area where we think this tool might be very, very useful. We certainly think that this tool can be useful throughout the state. However, and as Senator Monis Anderson discussed, the SIP, the Strategic Investment Program, has been a very good tool and very valuable in East Multnomah County and Gresham in attracting some high-quality employers to the community. However, its one downside is that it can take a very long time to do the negotiations between the city and the county and the state in setting up an agreement for the Strategic Investment Program. In LSI's case, that took almost 2 full years to get through all of that process. And there aren't very many companies, we think, that are willing, when they're making important locational decisions, to go through that kind of time and commitment to get to the final conclusion of that process. We also had a strategic investment program agreement with Fujitsu. Fujitsu did close down. We were fortunate in our ability to negotiate with them as they left to continue to keep their facility clean, which meant that it was viable for a replacement company to come in. And Microchip Technology came in and did purchase that site. And were able to utilize that site. One of the key reasons they chose to locate in that location was the ability to negotiate an agreement under the strategic investment program. They've said that openly. That was a key locational factor and decision for them. Because that site had already been operating under an agreement and because of the economic conditions at the time, we were able to get that process through in record time, about 3 to 4 months, which was exceptional. We think that's an anomaly. That's not the normal course, especially kind of looking at new areas and new business locational decisions. This tool, this proposal, simply adds an additional mechanism under the Strategic Investment Program to allow local jurisdictions to set up proactively strategic investment program zones. All of the criteria remain the same under the existing statute. We're not changing any other parameters. And in fact, if a company came into the state and found a site that they really liked that wasn't located in a zone, in an identified zone, they could go through the current mechanism to establish a strategic investment program agreement with the local county and city if the city were there. So it just adds an additional tool that we think can be valuable in some cases where we want to attract high-quality trade and sector jobs to the state and to the local community. And with that, I can either take questions from the committee or have Mr. Ferganesi give his presentation, and we can take questions at the end, whatever the committee's preferences.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
My name is Ron Papsdorf.
Ron
Papsdorf.
Papsdorf?
Papsdorf.
Papsdorf.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Papsdorf. Does Gresham have an enterprise zone?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, we currently do not have any enterprise zones identified today.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
And I'm just curious why you would not have done so. Or
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, there are two key issues why I think the city has not designated an enterprise zone today. One is that an enterprise zone, unlike the Strategic Investment Program, basically gives a 100% property tax abatement to qualifying employers that locate or companies that locate within the area. And quite frankly, with the city's financial situation and our revenues down anyways, we simply can't afford to give 100% property tax abatements to economic development. We have other incentives that we utilize within our downtown area and our transit districts to recruit specific economic development, but in terms of establishing an enterprise zone and allowing 100% property tax abatement to all development that comes into that area, we just can't afford to do that. The second reason is that the only area in Gresham that could qualify for designation as an enterprise zone under current law is our Rockwood neighborhood in the northwest part of Gresham. And we have in the fall of 2003, our voters approved the formation of an urban renewal district in Rockwood. And so we're already collecting tax increment to help pay for improvements to raise the economic development and raise the values in Rockwood, and offering tax abatements within an urban renewal area removes tax increment from the urban renewal tool. So you're working across purposes at that point.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you. That was a real good explanation. All right. And John?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is John Ferganesi. I'm the principal of Ferganesi Calthrop Associates. We're the principal land use consultant for the city of Gresham on the Springwater Project. I'd just like to give you kind of an overview of the Springwater Project to kind of underline how important it is for East County and for that part of the region, and also how the Strategic Investment Program would fit in there.
It looks a little blurry. Yeah, maybe we can. I adjusted this screen since we set up, so maybe we can do another adjustment on it.
How's your vision?
We are just completing the plan and are bringing it to fruition. This is an area that was brought into the urban growth boundary in 2002. The city of Gresham has been doing concept planning for the area, which means getting it completely ready for shovel ready for development. It's been doing not just land use planning, but public facilities planning, parks planning, all the financial planning needed to get this ready to go. Hearings are scheduled in May and June, I believe, or in June, and this should be adopted and in the city and really start working on it in just a couple of months. It is a fairly significant area and was brought in primarily to look for opportunities for jobs. What is happening here is also going to, I think, be repeated in the city of Damascus and the area south as well. These are both areas that have been brought in. We'll be experiencing very significant growth, and the hope is to not just have this be a dormitory for the city of Portland, but to have really develop its own economic development potential. The area has a number of development constraints that makes it quite beautiful, but also makes it a challenge in terms of getting the parts set aside that are really available for industrial land, and then identifying other useful things for the other areas. It has Johnson Creek, goes through there, a very important stream, one where salmon do still and steelhead do still come through there, and one where it has quite a beautiful environment today as well. We've been through scenario approach with the public, with all our stakeholders, and have gone through four different scenarios and have picked kind of the blended scenario, which is kind of the best ideas for these sites, ones that would allow us to really be able to maximize the development on all the parcels while retaining certainly the important natural areas that are going to be that are important for the amenities as well. Just to take you on a tour, the biggest area is called the Business Park Industrial. It's about 460 acres around Highway 26. And it will, at build out, conservatively, and Ron has reminded me that these are conservative estimates, accommodate over 5 million square feet of industrial development. Employment between 7,500 and 9,300 folks. Actually, if it were to develop like LSI, it would be over 12,000 employees. This is assuming some of this won't be at quite that development intensity. This is the high-tech area. It's the area that if we were to designate, this bill were to pass, this would be the place that you designate one of these zones where you really expect high investment businesses to come and locate. It will require access. We have here from Highway 26, and we have one of the plans that have been devised over time. Probably this will start with that great intersections on US 26, but over time this would have a split diamond interchange that would serve the industrial area and provide access to US 26. Hopefully, eventually this will also be tied in with 84 and down to 205 through some of the other transportation planning that's been done, which will make this kind of on the, give it access to the most important freight corridors and business corridors in the state. Moving over to the area west of Highway 26, you find here more creeks, more slope, but we found about 153 acres that is suitable basically for office business park type of development. This is would accommodate over 2 million square feet of office development and employment from about 5,000 to 6,000 employees. In addition to that, there are areas that are suitable for residential. This little knoll here by the Persimmon Golf Course would be available for estate housing, between 83 to 103 houses, and some more on the knoll that we've done some work since then that could be developed there safely, and that would be a couple of hundred basically estate homes for Gresham, which they don't have that many right now. We know that where business owners locate their homes, businesses soon follow. So we're making some really unique kind of Oregon accommodations for those. These are some areas for low-density residential, your typical 6,000 to 7,000 square foot single-family home, about 300 to 480 houses there. There's some an alternative housing here for basically townhouse development that would basically be accommodating more like the Orenco Village, small lot, people that want to buy a house but don't want to bother taking care of the lawn, something that I'm finding more attractive as the years go by. There's a mixed-use village to allow both the business for the employees and the people that live there to have day-to-day services, restaurants, beauty parlors, things like that, and accommodating it with some mixed-use buildings in the village. At the end of the road here, you can see there's actually three parks. This is the Hilltop Park. Has a beautiful view of Mount Hood. So this is really an integrated community, one that has been designed around basically about 800 net acres of development. And when it's built out, it would have 7.3 million square feet of new development, about 15,000 new employees, 1,300 housing units, over $1 billion in new investment for the city of Gresham. Being, I think, well-planned and kind of designed not just as another industrial park on a freeway with a sign on it, but really as part of a whole community that allows all the businesses and actually some workers to live there, we think it's quite an attractive point. This is the city of Gresham and has been really working to get all of the obstacles out of the way. As you know, Oregon planning can be, you know, kind of lengthy, complicated. But the one good thing about the planning is once you do it and get it out of the way, your access to a permit is very quickly. This isn't true in Washington and California, our main competitors that have a local environmental review that can get you on the sidetrack and stay for years. In fact, we work in California quite a bit. 5 to 7 years is not unusual to get a permit. In Oregon, we have the advantage of being able, once the planning's done, to turn it over in a short period of time. We want to use that competitive advantage by being able to bring in what comes out of SB 879 and apply it to a zone where we know what we want there. We can give incentive to these capital investment intensive industries, stimulate them and the associated development that comes with them. They're like the mother ship, all the little baby ships around them. If you look at what's happened to the area where Intel has gone in, lots of other businesses are coming around them. Primarily, it allows us to exploit our advantage of having well-planned areas where you can go in and get a quick decision, not just on the land use and the permitting, that's going to be done, but also be able to do something like you want to bring in a $1 billion investment and you can't deal with our tax structure. The SIP allows you to bring in capital-intensive businesses and to get a reasonable tax payment involved instead of paying property taxes on a $1 billion investment that's going to amortize in 4 or 5 years. That's why Intel was interested in it, and certainly why we want to make those kinds of businesses open the door, show them places where they can come in and make a decision in a matter of months, be under construction. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and we're here for any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, I'm interested in the public comment part of this process. Can you just give me a brief description of what that's been like?
We've involved the public from the very beginning with going to them saying, here's what we know about the site, here's the forecast for the site, and they actually did hands-on workshops where they laid out how they would like to see this area develop. We took all those ideas and built three basic concepts, measured them, modeled them, figured out what would happen to transportation, sewer, and water, also how it would look. And they actually, committee came up with a fourth scenario they did on their own. And those four scenarios came into the final scenario. We're now going through the public hearing process. As in any land use situation, not everybody's happy, but most people are. And I suspect that we've done a lot of work with the public to get as many problems ironed out as we could. And we've come up, I think, with reasonable uses for the property. We're not trying to get the property to do something it doesn't naturally want to do. And I think that market friendliness of the planning approach will lead to a lot of success when this hits the market. We expect it to be quite active.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, but I didn't get your last name.
Fregonesi. Fregonesi.
Y'all are doing this just to set us up today, I can tell.
So.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fregonesi. Okay, I got it. I'm wondering, I'm trying to understand this, of what we're asking that is different from what we currently have, and I probably, it's because I haven't read the bill really well, I should have read it better. But at the same time, I'm wondering, who finances this development? You know, what businesses are you know, coming in here? I mean, to make such a commitment with so little real data, if I were one of these people, I'd be wondering, you know, and also the transportation you mentioned in the school issue, but even the medical facility access. So it just seems like there's a whole lot missing.
Terms of this particular project, the capital investment required for it is part of the plan. We know it's going to take sewer, water, storm drain, transportation on the order of about $60 million to fund the whole thing. That sounds like a lot until you think of $1 billion in private investment that comes from a $60 million capital investment. The city is going to do it through its normal funds and maybe look at some innovative ways. Certainly it's going to try to partner with the state on developing some transportation improvements on US 26. That's all underway. But it's that's not really the challenge that we're looking for here today. I think Ron can better address this. But primarily it's right now to do one of these strategic investment programs, you've got to go through case-by-case specific hearings on the business. This allows businesses that meet certain criteria to be more or less for an area that's going to accommodate this to pre-approve businesses that meet certain criteria. So you get a zone where it's in your strategic investment program businesses are allowed to come in. That goes through the hearing. It goes through all the public scrutiny. But the zone is what is created rather than approval of a specific business. That business then comes in to get approval on a case-by-case basis. They meet criteria, objective criteria that are set up ahead of time. Ron, can you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, just to add a couple of things to that. The private development of Springwater is going to take a number of years, and it does rely on private investment in the form of economic development in the area. The public component of that is helping to both facilitate and help offset some of the capital infrastructure costs to serve the area. And you know, we do that through a variety of local mechanisms today. We do system development charges on new development to pay for growth-related infrastructure impacts. We make strategic initial investments in public infrastructure that allow an area to develop, like sewer trunk lines or main water lines in an area or a key transportation link to help facilitate. This proposal, Senate Bill 879, is aimed at just one piece of the puzzle to help make an area like Springwater come to fruition, and that's kind of on the tax side of the picture, and to help facilitate and ease the process for establishing strategic investment program agreements with qualifying employers in terms of cutting down the time frame for doing that, not changing the criteria for the strategic investment program, not changing the parameters, but streamlining the program so that we can work with our county partners and state partners to establish a strategic investment program zone up front and then market that to qualifying employers and companies that may be looking for new locations for either expansion or new investment, and proactively market that as an attractive tool for bringing in those companies to an area like Springwater.
Okay. And as I see the project, it goes into the Clackamas County, and how are you going to incorporate the whole things together?
Representative Lim, committee members, the Damascus area to our south in Clackamas County was also part of this urban growth boundary expansion decision by Metro. And it's also kind of on track and doing its planning work. It's quite frankly probably a good year kind of behind schedule of Springwater. It's got its own issues given that it's quite a bit larger It's less connected to an existing city, and in fact, they've incorporated a new city, Oregon's newest city of Damascus. So it's got kind of its own issues and constraints. Springwater does have some inherent advantages in that it is immediately adjacent to the city of Gresham. It's a little bit easier for us to extend our existing infrastructure elements into Springwater to serve that area, as opposed to an area like Damascus that's kind of starting from the ground up in some sense. But I think Damascus can be very successful as well and will help complement Springwater. And we've been working hand in hand with the folks involved in the planning efforts for Damascus and with Clackamas County to help link these areas together so that they are complementary, so that there are good infrastructure linkages between the areas.
Okay, and one other question I might have. We just passed a bill from the House not too long ago concerning the some cities and unincorporated area, they can the opportunity to opt out. Do you think that will affect on this Springwater project?
Chair Lim, I'm not familiar with the opting out of what?
In case I try to merging into the certain area, the people in that area has to vote it to approve of it. That's what I'm talking about.
Chair Lim, members of the committee, yes, this area will need to be annexed into the city of Gresham as a first step before urban development happens. I think, as Mr. Fregonesi discussed, we have been working very proactively with the community out in Springwater and the property owners and residents there during the entire planning process, and there is a lot of support for the direction of the plan from properties there, property owners in Springwater, and we're not going to go out and do a major land grab, if you will, by the city. The only tool that our annexation, the city of Gresham annexation policy utilizes is by consent of property owners and electors through the petition process, contiguous areas. And so we look forward to a very successful process. There are already groups of property owners forming their own kind of development associations privately to help look at how they can best consolidate their properties to make it attractive to development. We've got a lot of pressure from some segments of property owners that really want to be annexed in and really are embracing this plan and want to make it available for development. So I think there's some really good key opportunities on the near horizon.
Okay, so the crux of this Senate Bill 879, yes, I believe it's in the Section 5 that the county is seeking to ensure that all eligible projects constructed or installed within the particular geographic area and within the county receive a tax exemption under ORS 307.13 may request designation of a geographic area as a strategic investment zone. Do you think that is the crux of this bill?
Chair Lim, members of the committee, that is the crux of the bill. This allows us proactively in partnership with Multnomah County to establish a zone, do the public hearings through that process that's already required under the Strategic Investment Program, negotiate the qualifying criteria that go above and beyond the statute requirements, and reach agreements with all the taxing jurisdictions within the area on the distribution of the community service fee. So all of the basic parameters of the Strategic Investment Program remain in place. We're just allowed to get through that public hearing process and negotiate kind of the terms of the agreement between all the governing agencies ahead of time and establish that zone and then market that as an incentive for people, for qualifying companies to locate within the area.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair. Lim, is there already, I'm assuming there is, a residential area? I'm just wondering about this eminent domain issue. Is all these acres free and clear, or is this a part of a Measure 37 activity, or how do you get rights to all of this property?
Chair Lim, Representative Nelson, really, there is no particular eminent domain issue related to the development of Springwater. You know, we'll make some key investments and help facilitate improvement to public infrastructure to help serve land. But really the sale and development of private property within the Springwater area is going to be subject to the free market. And property owners are going to make individual decisions about what the right market price for their property is and when they sell and to whom, and then that subsequent owner makes decisions about what type of development under the framework of the plan. In terms of Measure 37, I think we believe, at least, and I think it would be pretty apparent that under current Multnomah County rural zoning that exists out in Springwater today, where basically people have agricultural development rights or the right to a single home in most cases on a piece of property, usually at fairly large size, and we're talking about significant upzoning as areas of Springwater are annexed in, where values are much increased by that change to urban zoning. I'd be hard pressed to see a situation where someone could claim that the presence of that new urban zoning that allows major new either industrial development or office development or higher density residential development or commercial development was a reduction in value from what they have today.
Right. Mr. Chair. Okay. Vice Chair Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I follow on the reverse of that? In that area, are there significant either actual filings or at least talk of filings on Measure 37 claims? My question is specifically, and this I can relate this to an area in my district, would doing this, would sort of designating this zone, if you will, would it take care of some potential Measure 37 claims that may be existing right now or at least being talked about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, perhaps, I don't know about kind of the specific relationship to the use of the strategic investment zone to the Measure 37. We haven't really looked at it from that particular angle. So I don't know directly. I think the change to the urban zoning really is the larger impact in terms of what the relative value of the land is for property owners there.
Thank you. And Art, can I ask you to come forward? I might have a couple of questions for you. Or could you, your opinion on this Senate Bill 879, what it does and how it's going to be utilized? I'm sure this bill, that the original intention came from the Gresham area for Springwater project, but this is not for Gresham alone. And could you explain how this bill could be utilized statewide?
Yes, by all means. Again, my name is Arthur Fish with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. As always, it's a pleasure, Chair Lynn, members of the committee. First of all, the department is quite favorably disposed to passage of engrossed Senate Bill 879. It would create, and I guess one of the best ways to think about this is we sort of got the strategic investment program proper. And by my reading of the bill, I would say that would continue to exist out there. If a company comes along and the county, the city, or even a tribal government are interested in working on an agreement to provide for that investment, such as they're doing in Washington County, as I read in the newspapers, with Intel, then that would still be there. Then you'd have sort of a separate approach out here called the Strategic Investment Zone, okay, which I think has been duly well discussed here. You sort of create it. You kind of go through the process, sight unseen, in terms of just opening it up. And you sort of create a sort of a hybrid between SIP and an enterprise zone, when an enterprise zone is more of a mass production type of, we try to process companies and get them through the system without a lot of rigmarole. Now, how would that work? I think, it's a good question. You have to really think about this beyond Springfield. Obviously, that you're getting a big dose of Springfield here, and that is one, that's a clear example. But what you have is the potentiality, of course, of other communities doing this for similar types of reasons. Whether they choose to do it or not, that's fine. But, in a rural area, as we talked about, you have lower thresholds, as we talked about the other day. And, so we could see this in rural areas in a variety of situations. And I would think it would be all to the good, because the other program is always there. This does create a chance to sort of set yourself in stone and be ready.
Okay, and do you believe with this bill, certain counties, when it's eligible, they can create SIP zone ahead of any other company coming in, and the site is ready, so in case some other companies want to come in, they don't have to process 1 or 2 years process because site already approved for that.
Chair Lynn, members of the committee, yes, I can see that happening. Whether, I don't know of any place other than Multnomah County in the Gresham situation that might take advantage of it anytime soon, however.
All right. Okay. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm listening to this, and it sounds to me like what I would call an upscale enterprise zone. Is that a fair way to look at this? I see a lot of nods. But
yes. Yeah, that's one way to look at it, Representative Riley, members of the committee, Chair Lim. One of the things that was alluded to here, an enterprise zone does have a certain economic hardship criteria to designate one. This doesn't, nor do the businesses have to meet any particular hiring agreements. They would have to meet the community service fee payment and the other parameters of the existing exemption and whatever local was set up. So it could be. I think it's more a sort of, obviously, big investment, you know, type of thing, because however you look at it, the thresholds limit the program, however it's set up as a zone or a case by case, as a fairly unusually huge types of investments.
When we're talking about the SIP limitations, would that be per company that comes in? It wouldn't be for the whole zone.
Representative Riley, members of the committee, that's correct. That's my reading, that the same parameters would apply to an eligible project, which is a state commission function to actually authorize or determine to be so, and it would apply. And so the zone, depending on how large it is, could entertain several such investments, or it might be still more or less just one potential parcel. I believe this Clearwater, from what I saw, could probably involve at least a few different major investments of this sort.
Okay.
Right. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Art and John and Ron. What are we talking about in terms of dollars? I mean, what are we giving up?
Representative Nelson, Chair Lynn, members of the committee. If you're looking at one of these areas, you're talking about a large investment to begin with just to be eligible. So if it's a rural area, it's as much as $25 million or more, just the minimum that investment could be. Now, it's just like the strategic investment program. You do pay taxes at that threshold, and the taxes below that value threshold. So, let's say it's a rural area under the present law. A company would pay $25 million of property taxes $25 million of property value. They would still pay property taxes. The exemption is the property value above that level, and so that's why it's called a partial exemption, because you're still paying taxes on part of it, but you get an exemption on the rest. But I should point out that these companies that have used the program are major taxpayers where they go. The 100 in the rural urban areas where it's been used, they have been the 100 million that they add to the tax or the assessment rolls in the county is very sizable. So it's hard to say what you give up because they do that and they pay a community service fee. So it's a pretty good deal all around if you look at it that way. They get an exemption, but they're still paying taxes on a big chunk plus the community service fee.
Chair Lim, Representative Nelson, if I could just add to that, I think that's exactly right. And I think beyond the numbers, the question that we have to ask ourselves is this program, we believe, is really targeted to those companies that wouldn't locate within Oregon but for this tool being in place. These are companies with a size of investment that are penalized a bit compared to other states around the country that operate under a little bit different tax structure. So I think it's not so much what you're giving up as much as what you're gaining. You're gaining a major investment in the state in terms of corporate and private investment, as well as the jobs and the income tax revenue for the state that those are that are created. The employees of these companies are, by and large, above average wages, adding significant income tax for the state as well as the property tax revenue to the local jurisdictions.
Follow-up question?
Follow-up.
Thank you for those answers, but I'm just... I guess I'm not sure of what we're talking about. This is a huge development, right? And it's 15 years, is it, of abatement for property taxes? Not like a, what is it, does in the enterprise zone you eventually start paying it back after 10 years, I believe. Is that correct?
Representative Nelson, Chairman, members of the committee, an enterprise zone exemption is, as was alluded to, 100%, but it only lasts 3 years in many cases. It may be extended up to 5 years in total. So that is, so it's a much shorter but more complete exemption.
What is it that, pardon me, excuse me,
mm-hmm.
Chair?
Yes.
What is it that has the 10-year payback? E-commerce?
I think I know. Representative Nelson, Chairman, members of the committee, you did have House Bill 3350 before you recently, which is the Small City Investment Program, as Representative Butler refers to it.
Oh.
And that's an exemption on taxable income. So that's a sort of a deduction from your income taxes based on the profit associated with a facility that would qualify under that program. And that does go for 10 years. Yeah.
And a last question, please.
Mm-hmm.
So, does this ever end? No, I mean, infinitely.
Yes.
I mean, I can imagine for centuries, you know, how many changes are going to be. What is the cure-all? What's the guarantee that this business is coming and staying and, you know, not going to be a Georgia-Pacific or any of these others who leave us?
Representative Nelson, Chairman, members of the committee, that's a good question. I mean, there is a sort of interminable aspect to one of these exemptions that go on for 15 years. And there's no, and I think the one thing, of course, is that the investment in the building and so forth is going to be around a lot longer than just 15 years. But the equipment, which often is the huge part of the investment that receives the exemption, may not have such a long lifetime. So it's sort of a good question. I think one of the risks, I guess, of a strategic investment zone is that you sort of open the door, people can walk in and use the program. With the strategic investment program, at least, that is the type of question that the local governments can ask in particular to that particular company. I think with the ones that have used it so far, Intel and others, nobody doubts that they're in for the long haul. If they can continue to, you know, receive some treatment in the tax system that makes their type of investment feasible. Okay, and that's, I think, the key question that this program has served and what's made it such a great tool for those types of semiconductor, high-tech, very expensive capital investments. But, you know, I think it's a very fair question to ask. The one assurance is whether it's the zone system or the regular program that we have today is that they're still making a huge investment and making a huge commitment that I don't think anybody would walk away from lightly. I know Fujitsu obviously was faced with severe problems, but still they left a beautiful plant that is still being used and employing people and pay taxes before they were able to use it, and now we'll pay taxes even under the program.
Chair, would you mind?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm just trying to understand. I was thinking this morning that, and I probably didn't hear correctly again, but Intel, because of the arrangement, it's like $450 million of taxes they don't pay, but yet they turn around and pay fees to the city. And so I'm just wondering, who gets the fees here? The county? The city? How do you participate in this?
Representative Nelson, Chairman, members of the committee. There's two types of fees in that set up with Intel and other businesses that have used the program to date, as well as could be set up in a sort of pre-established way with one of these proposed strategic investment zones. And one fee is called the community service fee, and that's mandated in the law, and that is up to a certain amount based on 25% of the tax savings, and that goes to the county, and by agreement, the county, the city, if it's inside the city limits, and the special districts in that area, up to at least 75% of them, and this was a sort of alternative to the opt-out that was developed last session, and they would split up the community service fee. Other fees could be established with approving a project, or in this case with strategic investment zone, and I do know that the Intel situations have involved a number of other payments to the local governments based on certain formulas and so forth. So that's just a sort of other requirements provision that's in the law, and I can show you where that's at.
Could you allow me one last one?
One last one? You're asking good questions.
Oh, thank you. Were you at the hearing in the Senate on this bill?
Representative Nelson, Chair Lim, members of the committee. Actually, no, I was away.
Okay, well then I'll talk to Ron. I'm assuming you were there. Yes, how did you handle the no votes from Jenny Burdick and Betsy Johnson? What's the issue there?
Chair Lamb, Representative Nelson, members of the committee, I actually I'm not sure what the issues were on the no votes. The bill passed out of committee with the amendment unanimously out of the committee, and the good senators didn't actually speak to me before the vote was taken, so I'm not sure what they had. It did pass the Senate on a 24-2 vote, as you referenced.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could, and Representative Nelson, just to get to your other question, I think really the establishment of an SIP zone under this proposal isn't our effort to just kind of open a wide open gate for any company to come in. We are very interested in attracting high-quality traded sector employers and companies to the East Multnomah County area. And specific to the bill, under Section 5, the local jurisdictions in establishing a zone will describe in that agreement other local requirements. So we can get at issues like wages and local employment and number of issues that are covered under current strategic investment program agreements with individual companies. And we fully expect to do that. We think this tool offers us a little bit more flexibility in that we can do that proactively. And we anticipate working with our county board to set up a bit of a menu performance-based local criteria standards so that we do have some control over the types of companies and the kind and the quality of companies that locate in and take advantage of this tool as we recruit to those companies that we'd like to see locate and we believe are a good local fit and a fit within the Springwater area.
Okay. The sponsor of this proposal for this enterprise of this SIP zone, is that the county or city or each separate, or they have to combine it together?
Chair Lim, members of the committee, under the state law, there's two agreements required. If in fact the area is located within a city, an agreement between the county and the city. In an area outside of a city, in an unincorporated part of a county, it's just the county board establishing the zone. But in the case of a city, it's through an agreement between the city and the county through those public hearing processes. And then there's a separate agreement between Mr. Fish referenced, separate agreement between at least 75% of the taxing jurisdictions within the area on the distribution of the community service fee amongst the taxing jurisdictions. And obviously, the state has a role to play in both the approval and the setup of the zone at the first, as well as the review of any proposed eligible projects to locate in a zone afterward to make sure that they actually comply with the statutory requirements and any local requirements that have been set up between the city and the county.
Okay. Usually in the past, this SIP program has been utilized by the high-tech companies, such as Intel, Fujitsu, LSI, and plus some other companies. And but this one is particular. This is not the company of high-tech. Mostly some of them are residential in their area. Some companies, you know, they are getting anything above $100 million, they are getting 75% tax, not paying property taxes. At the same time, we need to serve the schools, and a lot of taxes has to come in. And then if they have a write-off such as 75%, then how could we help the schools and infrastructures in that area? That's the key questions I have.
Chair Lynn, members of the committee, the strategic investment program is really geared only at traded sector industries. These are job producing employment types of development, not residential development. And so this tool is not geared there at all. And again, I would reiterate that this is not a full tax abatement. This adds value to the community. It adds tax revenue to all of the taxing jurisdictions, as well as the community service fee that's distributed among the various taxing jurisdictions to help pay for some of those costs to serve that are associated with development that might occur under this tool.
But my question, if it's a spring water project as an area, and if it's if even the house built in that area, if it's a part of the spring water project,
no.
And do they get in tax exempt, or that the residential is completely out of the tax exempt?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, if a zone is established anywhere in the state, and at least if, in fact, this were approved and signed into law, and Gresham chose to, in partnership with Multnomah County, establish a zone in Springwater, we would really look hard at targeting the boundaries of that zone, and we would focus, I would expect, on that area that was identified or a subcomponent of the area identified for industrial development, where we expect, one, the qualifying companies can locate within the area, and where we want to focus those types of employers, where it's easiest for us to serve with infrastructure and where we can take best advantage of kind of the magnet kind of effect that these large private investments have in terms of other supplying and smaller companies come to locate. So the companies, any development that occurs within an identified zone under this proposal would still have to qualify for the partial tax exemption that's provided through the strategic investment program. So doesn't apply to any development that happens. And in fact, a lot of other development could happen within a zone that didn't take advantage of the strategic investment program aspect, because they were too small, or they didn't qualify, or they weren't a traded sector company.
Chair Lynn, members of the committee, if I might, I would just point out, I think it's a good question in the sense that you could foresee a residential developer sort of setting themselves up as a business and doing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of development and maybe trying to use this. Okay. Boundaries of the zone aside, that really is beyond any realm of possibility, because a business would have to come to the Economic and Community Development Department, and our commission would approve the project, and the first line is that it has to be a traded sector business firm. And a traded sector business firm is one that is engaged in international, national competition, retail, residential development, or completely off the board. No, that pretty much covers it. I would just point out that I think in one of these zones, however, you're still going to see essentially the same types of companies, the high-tech semiconductor fabs using this, because they're really the most likely type of business in the traded sector that would invest this kind of money to begin with. And so they're still subject to the same threshold, the same traded sector thing. And I would point that out. Actually, it's right here. If you look on page 2 of the bill is A, engrossed. Line 6 and 7 are really the key things that commission would go off of that would exclude just about anything other than major industries that are, you know, investing so much per project.
Exactly. All right. And thank you very much. You mentioned the trade sectors. So do we have any clear definition of what's the trade sectors here?
Chair Lim, members of the committee, the trade sector are businesses that are engaged in national and international competition. I mean, that's essentially, I think, all that the definition says. However, that is, in our view, crystal clear as far as companies that are producing a product or service that other companies out beyond the state are competing with them. If you're doing retail or residential, you're strictly competing within a very limited geographical area, and so it's a pretty firm line. But that really defines what our agency does. We don't get into the commercial and a lot of other types of quote development that goes on out there. We are engaged in companies that are on a national or international stage, at least in terms of their rivals and so forth.
Okay, and one of my concerns I have also, even though it says the nationwide and the international competition, there might be some companies might be coming into this area, possibly direct compete with some of the company located outside of this area, then we might have some complaint from some people they are getting a tax break and we are not. And where is the fairness in this issue?
Chairman, members of the committee, that is a very tough question. There is always that question. I think, we have the two programs, one, the Enterprise Zone, which does limit it to particular areas of economic distress, and that is sort of its excuse for helping people, companies in those areas versus ones outside the Enterprise Zone. And I think that's a system that has worked very well, and businesses that can or cannot use it are all very supportive or tend to be supportive of those kinds of efforts. I think with the strategic investment program, be it the standard case-by-case or the zone, one does have to look at how, very peculiar and unique the types of companies are that invest these huge, massive amounts, and that they are not being treated fairly necessarily under the current property tax system as it would exist, because they would have to pay such enormous amounts of property taxes relative to any other measure, just because of a byproduct of the type of capital and equipment that they have to purchase. So, I mean, it's all a balancing act, and the equity questions are very real, and are people on both sides, right on both sides of the line, that could feel badly about it. But that's the business we're in.
Okay, and hold on that. So my thought is that passing the law, it might be easier, but that we need to understand the consequences when it's mm-hmm. passed the law. And then when you are creating SIP program in certain area, and the bill clearly says it's got to go through the public hearing process many times, and the things I'm talking about is going to come up. Some people are opposing it and supporting it, and we need to figure out the problem ahead of time before it comes, make sure this is a fair and balanced approach.
Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to agree with you. That's exactly right. I'm curious because I understand the business portion, but I do not understand why 1,300 housing units are included in this development. I just don't buy that. I like the business, but I just don't think a strategic business zone should include 1,300 housing units.
Chair Lim, representing Nelson members of the committee, I'm going to leave this to them. I mean, they have brought up a much bigger picture of all that they're doing out there that goes well beyond the industrial and the strategic investment zone, and I think I'll leave it to them to kind of back you out of that and make sure it's clear that we're, you know, that we're, what we're talking about here.
Representative Nelson and Chair, members of the committee, we wanted to give you bring you up to date on what's happening in the Gresham area and give you the perspective of the Springwater project. The only area that is being considered for this is the industrial zone. No residential uses are permitted there. It's the BPI zone, the blue area. It's the heart of the area. We simply wanted to show that around when you bring in key industries to an area like that, it stimulates development around it. The areas that are set aside for residential are not suitable for business. They're too far away. It's too steep and sloping. But that is part of building a good business environment, is to have good neighborhoods nearby that your workers can live and that business owners can live there. And they can enjoy the Oregon lifestyle in there. So we just were giving you a perspective. Probably in retrospect, we should have just focused on the industrial area, because I think the whole purpose of Springwater is to bring jobs to East Multnomah County. And I think the whole purpose of the strategic investment program was to provide certain kinds of businesses in just that industrial zone equal footing with their competitors nationally, with our competitors nationally. Our property tax system was set up for shipbuilding and things like that, where you had a big industry came in and their personal property is taxed like property, like we pay on our houses. And you have Freightliner isn't part of this program. They pay all the property tax on all their stamps and big machines that make freight, that make things. All of a sudden you get Intel comes in and they spend billions of dollars to make a Pentium chip, and in 3 years it's no good. All that equipment is no good. And if we would have charged them, if we charged them the way our property tax system, which is set up with a kind of a wartime industry in mind, World War II type manufacturing system, they would be paying many, many, many times more taxes in Oregon than they would in other states. We are just out of the picture. And for us to attract industries here, it's not really a property tax abatement. I mean, it technically is, but really it's just making property taxes for high-tech industries reasonable and to allow them to pay their fair share, but not 5 times or 10 times their fair share. And the only thing we're trying to do is to set up so that in a place like Springwater, in just the industrial zone, industries, and not all industries, just not Freightliner or, you know, Burton Ski Boards or whatever, they would come in and just pay normal property taxes. But an industry that comes in and has to spend $1 billion on a special machine to make something wouldn't pay property taxes on all $1 billion. They'd pay property taxes on some subset of that that would be fair, that would be like other industries. They wouldn't get penalized for being high-tech and spending a lot of money on expensive equipment. And that's all we're trying to do with this thing, is to put us in a competitive advantage around the country so that we can bring people here and allow local businesses to grow without getting penalized by our tax system, which just is, the property taxes just don't work for high-tech businesses. And that's the only part that we're trying to do.
Representative Riley.
Thank you very much. If I may, my understanding of this is that if the entire city were an SIP zone, only those businesses which are eligible to participate in the SIP program would actually be involved in the SIP program. Nobody else, not houses, not other businesses, but only those specific businesses which are currently eligible to participate in the SIP program would be eligible. And the only difference is you would have it set up in advance so that they could get their SIP agreement much quicker. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chair, Representative Varela, I think that's exactly right. We're trying to streamline the process for those eligible projects, those eligible companies, but this proposal in no way expands the types of development that can qualify for the Strategic Investment Program. All of the parameters that are currently in state statute for the Strategic Investment Program remain intact and would apply to these zones.
Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So my final question was, well, why don't we just say right now 36 counties have one of these? I mean, why? What's the need to go, you know, one by one through an approval process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I think that gets to the crux of the good questions that the committee has talked about, and as Mr. Fish referenced, the trade-offs at the local level that need to be debated and need to go through a public hearing process and discussion at the local level, at the county board and city council, to really talk about where this is an appropriate tool and what the parameters ought to be for it, and really allow the public to comment in that process. I think that's one, at least from a local perspective, we believe is the value of this, as opposed to kind of just adopting this blanket wide across the state, is allowing that local debate about those trade-offs.
And if I may,
yes, of course, Representative Bryant.
In fact, what we're doing here is we're allowing the entire state to make those decisions individually.
Correct. This program affects more county and cities. It doesn't affect the state. Am I correct? Because this abatement is that the property tax issues and plus other equipment.
Yes. Chair Lynn, members of the committee, from a purely revenue perspective, that is true. I would, however, make the case that you know, the program as we've had it, or this potential new alternative approach, has had a great impact on the state, and the state has benefited very much, in fact, from the investments and the development that we were able to achieve in the 90s when we were out there really able to push for them.
Okay, and I got a call from the Oregonian and the Porto some time ago about how valid this SIP program is. Are we giving out too much to attract the business into our state? I thought that has been a valid question. And they were asking me what benefit we got out of this SIP program. But I can tell that the job creation, more income tax collected, plus many others, but do we have the actual numbers that the what we are giving out or what we are gaining? I think we need to have some kind of a hard number to go by, because that criticism, some negative impact will be coming continually.
Yes.
When we are coming this, we need to have a good answer.
Right.
Not just a speculation, this is what happened, but we need to have some hard number. This is what happened, this has been good, and we need to have some kind of a fact. But as I looked at it, I couldn't find a clear answer other than the study done by the Intel that tells me some aspect of it, but I don't have any full answer.
Chair, members of the committee, in response to questions by Representative Nelson, when we were first here, the department, we did provide a listing of exactly the property taxes that have been paid by companies and estimated how much they have paid in other types of revenues, and that was just one aspect, and that was a fairly conservative aspect that just looked at the public finance elements. It didn't take into account the sort of this quote $25 billion worth of economic growth and so forth, which, I mean, again, is, you know, one can model out pretty with a great deal of assurance. And we could try to get our hands on that or show you how that can be illustrated. But I think we did provide you with a very good view of how at least on just a public finance level, we have probably gained very well from those investments in the state.
Representative Riley.
Thank you. Just very quickly. So you're telling me, and I would love to have this, if if you could model the biggest question we have ever, which is Intel, is that possible for you to do, to model what the impact of that is and give that to us?
Well, Chair Liam, Representative Riley, Members of the Committee, I don't know if it's possible for me to do it personally, but I have, you know, I know that people do that.
And I see nods at the back.
That's where the numbers come from. So yeah, if they're nodding, they can do it. But yeah, I've seen those sorts of things, and I understand how they can be done, and feel very confident about the way that those things are done.
I'd love to have that.
The confidence?
The confidence would be great too, but I was speaking specifically of the model.
No, I'll take a stab at it and see what we can find.
Any other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And is any other person like to testify on this House for Senate Bill 879? None. And I'm going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 879. And then concerning the informational meeting of the Oregon Tourism Plan for 2005-07, they were not available. Possibly we are going to have a Wednesday.
Yes, I think we should carry that over till Wednesday.
All right. And then we'll do that.
Are we going to have a work session on this bill?
I'm not comfortable at this point yet. Okay. Maybe we'll look it up the Wednesday or Friday.
Okay.
There might be some other issues might be coming up. So with that, we are going to... Did I close this one already?
You did.
Okay. And since there is no further business before us at this time, the meeting is adjourned, and we will be meeting on Wednesday again. Thank you. Yeah.